Tonight on the 2009 Dadossi Game of the Year Awards, we discuss the year that was, console wars, and why we keep spending money to replace that white console.
It's basically like an old man, you know, lying in the bed and we're all just standing around waiting for it to go so we can start going through the record collection.
We discuss the glut of games that have been pushed back to early 2010.
It was mainly because of one big massive game that I'm sure that will be mentioned later.
And of course, we announce our 2009 Games of the Year, including some that not all of us agree with.
I just follow the blue line. Oh, it should be in that room. Are you sure you haven't checked the room? Yeah, I'm sure.
This is the 2009 Dadossi Game of the Year Awards. Hello and welcome to Dadossi Gamecast, the yearly podcast from dadossigamesite.com.au. I call it the yearly podcast because we actually haven't done one for quite some months. Podcast duties have been left to the very excellent boys at thumbpad.com.au. They've been bearing the flag for all things video game and all things audio. But we thought that we'd come back, have a bit of a reunion, and do our Dadossi Game of the Year Awards for 2009. Welcome, Derek.
Yeah, welcome, mate. It's good to be here. It has been a while.
Yes, it has. We've got Aaron over in WA.
Good morning, people of Australia.
And we've got young Sam down in South Australia. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Yeah, yes, well, thanks. Now, let's get straight into it, and let's talk a little bit about 2009. Let's start off with probably the hottest point of contention, and it only seems to rage on with more ferociousness. The console war between what it seems like just the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 now, with websites like newsforgames.com, did I get that right? I don't care, it's not my site. Just seems to be all their content is just based around whether the PlayStation 3 is better or the Xbox 360 is better. I think we've all got both of the consoles, don't we?
Yep.
Yep.
I'll have two of both the consoles after Christmas, actually. How bad I am.
Which I guess that's a decent enough segue to talk about Xbox 360's hardware issues. My Xbox failed just recently. Aaron's is on its way out.
It's basically like an old man, you know, lying in the bed and we're all just standing around waiting for it to go so we can start going through the record collection.
How's yours going, Sam? Because you actually bought my old console.
Yeah, it sounds like a jet taking off at the moment, and it's leaving on some of my games tiny little circle scratches in it. But so I've just got to start installing them on the hard drive when I play them. But other than that, it's okay.
So on paper, this thing acts like a bucket of shit. Why do we love it so much, Derek? Like, why do we keep coming back to it? Why do we keep buying $300 consoles?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it's definitely been the games that have probably dragged it through that have allowed it to just forget of its shortcomings. Also, I know we come back to it and it's kind of petty, but the controller is probably in the preferred kind of setup for me. So yeah, I'm actually onto my third Xbox 360 as well. So it kind of pales in comparison to the initial cost of buying a PlayStation. Now they're actually kind of definitely look like the cheaper kind of console, but.
But you talk about the games, but really, Sam, this year, PlayStation 3 has shined and has outperformed in terms of exclusives and the games that have come out on it.
Yeah, well, games like Uncharted 2, Infamous, Killzone have come out this year, which is some of the games that were promised a long, long time ago before the PlayStation was released. They finally got released now, and I think that their exclusives this year beat the 360s anyway.
There's been some exclusive DLC, which was funny to me because I remember Sony quite vocally saying they were never going to do that, and then with Batman they had the Joker DLC exclusive to the PS3.
Yeah, that was a bit strange. It was just sort of an about-face by Sony. But
and also how tight-fisted they were with Ghostbusters because they had the distribution rights and they were actually really kind of mean-fisted in our region with that we actually had to wait another 6 months. For a game that really wasn't worth waiting for, I got a PS3.
Business-wise.
I was extremely disappointed. But I know I probably have a little bit more green blood in myself than blue blood, but this has definitely been the year of PS3 for me, and the games that are coming, like God of War 3 for one, I actually think that they're a little bit behind on the consoles, but the quality of games that are coming out are far superior, actually. It's besides, DLC for GTA 4 and the Fallout DLC that we had first, it almost was a bit of a write-off year for exclusives for Xbox.
But is it even an issue? I mean, all four of us have both the consoles. In fact, I've got all three, and a DS and a PSP, I've got a lot. And a lot of people I do know that don't run a video game website still have both an Xbox 360 and a PlayStation 3. Is it even an issue? Which is which? I mean, I got Assassin's Creed 2 on the PlayStation 3 just because it just happened to be a Blockbuster at the time and it didn't concern me. That might surprise you to hear, Sam.
It does, actually. I haven't seen you playing it, but yeah.
Yeah, there's something going on there. Because I have been, mate.
I'm pretty
sure.
Well,
the only game I've seen you play, Mick, lately is SingStar.
Didn't we have a fun time on Saturday night with the SingStar? Friday night it was.
I was the funky Cole Medina, but that's probably for another show we can discuss.
You did very well. Just to keep on SingStar for a second, there is no Cold Chisel downloadable for SingStar.
Thank God.
What's working class man supposed to do, though?
Well, that's solo Jimmy Barnes. But regardless, we got some John Farnham and we still sang it like Jimmy Barnes.
Oh. What was it? Anyway, we're getting sidetracked. But yeah, I've said it numerous times before. I think it doesn't kind of ring true, but I actually don't care what console I play on, if it's a good game. And that's pretty evident in what I actually voted for this year, which we'll discuss about soon. But I think a lot of people would probably be surprised with some of the titles that are actually nominated.
I think we kind of glossed over the subject of multiplayer, though, where the PlayStation still hasn't implemented party chat this year, still hasn't brought in any of those sort of things that have made Live so strong and made it, the preferred option for games like Call of Duty and stuff like that.
Yeah, Modern Warfare 2, definitely was a no-brainer for 360 for me.
Well, that's right, and I take the same. It'd be interesting to hear what you have to say, Sam, but if a game is multiplayer online, hands down, I'll get it for the Xbox 360.
But my friends list, I've got 45 friends on Xbox Live, I've got 5 on PSN. It's just...
Right.
Because you can't...
That's because
you're
not popular in the PSN.
Yeah, I'm not... Yeah, I'm like the poster child for they throw darts at me because I'm not forgiving. But it's also the fact that I just can't interact and build friendships and stuff with people online because... You can't just jump in there and chat to them, just add them straight after a game.
I was talking to a guy who has Modern Warfare 2 on both the 360 and the PlayStation 3. He actually came from the PS3 and recently bought an Xbox 360. And he was telling me that the care packages that you get that get dropped, on Xbox 360 it never seems to be an issue. If you drop one, you call one in, you get it. Nobody even goes for it. But he was saying that because there's not many people with their microphones talking, that it's just open slather, and they just run in and grab. If you called it in,
that
they'll run in and
so
grab
rude.
It. And it's just because the sheer lack of communication. And what's the camaraderie, the teamwork like on playing games online, PlayStation 3, Sam?
Well, to be honest, if you're playing with randoms on Xbox Live and you're playing with randoms on PlayStation Network, it really feels the same. Like, I'm someone that doesn't play a lot of games online, but when I do it, something like Call of Duty, I've got that on both. And when I got Call of Duty on the 360, I was playing, it felt just like I was playing on the PlayStation 3, except it was a different controller.
Sure, yeah.
But it's a lot easier to play with friends on the 360 than it is with PlayStation because you've got the cross-game invites and you've got the party chat. But unless you're gonna use those and you're just gonna play online, there's no point.
In
my opinion. But
so, Aaron, do you think it's something that Sony are gonna look into next year? I mean, we only just recently had a fairly major update for the PlayStation 3 again, didn't we?
Yeah. That was only about a month ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A month and a bit.
I think so. It's still downloading.
Yeah, it's still downloading.
Sorry. But do you think, I mean, I've heard a lot of people just use the phrase, Sony just don't care when it comes to that sort of thing. Now, that's sort of, that's a bit sensationalist. I do agree with that, but it does sort of seem that way.
I'm sure they do care. They must care. They must want that competitive edge. But I just think, Sam could probably scream at me if I'm wrong about this, the software, the PlayStation is so much more closed off and difficult to play around with. The Xbox, it gets called a PC and a console for a reason, because it is quite open to go in and make changes like that on the fly. Whereas I think the PlayStation software might be a little bit more difficult for them to adjust for things like that, major changes like that.
It's a bit different. Right, it's a bit different because on the 360, when you download an update, the reason it seems so quick is because you're only downloading that part of the update and then it just changes it. The PlayStation, you have to reflash the whole firmware. So you download the entire firmware every time you update. So even for a tiny little update, it just doesn't send it out. You have to download all the firmware and reinstall it.
Yeah, right.
And what you said about the software being more open on the 360 is actually a bit backwards, because on the 360, there are things that they have to do. Stuff like cross-game chat, cross-game invites, all that sort of thing. Microsoft says, if you're going to make a game for our console, you have to put that in. Whereas Sony, as you see, like Modern Warfare 2, actually has cross-game invites on the PS3.
Yeah, right.
But that's because Infinity Ward said, okay, we're going to put it in. Sony have all these things in place, but it's up to the developers to put them in where Sony doesn't make it mandatory.
Yeah.
Gone are the days where a game will sell itself. And 2009 proved this time and time again with games like Halo 3 ODST, Killzone 2, Uncharted 2, Modern Warfare 2, reaching new stratospheres of hype. Let's talk about some of the games that really surprised us, the ones that didn't receive a lot of attention prior to their release, but turned out to be gems. What was your surprising gem this year, Aaron?
My surprising gem was actually a game I played yesterday. And that was The Saboteur, which I picked up expecting, given that it's got so little press, to be pretty crap. But after the first 2.5 hours, I'm loving it. It's a fantastic, fun game.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good melding of Assassin's Creed sort of target-based gameplay, climbing buildings, setting traps, stalking people, and lots of GTA stealing cars, running over Nazis and things like that, and heaps of tits. And the main character is an Irish race car driver, which is awesome.
So we're a bit biased. So that's...
okay, there is probably some bias.
So because it's an Irishman game of the year?
Yeah, who lives in a brothel, which is, brilliant. but it's generally, despite that, it's actually, if you play it, it is a really good game. It's worth getting out, at least giving it a rental to see if you like it. But I think if you like Assassin's Creed and GTA, and the World War II setting fits the game perfectly.
It's got a bit of an interesting backstory too, because the pandemic had recently closed its doors and EA took over, is that right? Or they took over the game anyway.
I think it was done and EA just pushed it out the door.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is their swan song game as well, which is a bit sad because they were a pretty good company.
Yeah. Yeah, well, pandemic was here in Brisbane for a little while and they shut the doors probably about 12 months ago. Yeah. What about you, Sam? What surprised you that just didn't get a lot of attention?
Probably, I'd have to say Infamous. It's probably the best open world game I've played, including Assassin's Creed 2, which I just finished about a week ago. It's just something with that game in me just clicked. And that's something hard for a game to do, where I sit down, I'll usually play a game for an hour or two. But if I can sit down and I play a game, the first time I play it for 8 hours... there's something sort of addictive about the game. Sort of open world, free-flowing traversal. Sort of, it's more mechanical than Assassin's Creed 2, so instead of holding a button, climbing, you get a little bit more control, even though it does get a bit sticky at sometimes, trying to stick to everything. But superhero games, that didn't seem to get nearly the hype it should have until after it's released.
So let's talk about some of the most disappointing games then. Maybe perhaps some of the games that were really hyped up to be quite good and then just really fell flat. One that comes to mind for me were which I did enjoy, but it didn't have the replay value that I thought it would, was Halo 3 ODST. A lot of people were very, very disappointed with the way that turned out. What did you think about that one, Aaron?
I liked ODST. I think it's got a bit of a bum rap. But I liked the things that were different about it. Obviously, it wasn't as dramatic a change as people were expecting. But maybe my expectations were quite low. I was really expecting what it was, which was an expansion to Halo. And that's what it was, and I was pretty satisfied with it. And being the Halo freak I am, I was delighted at some of the turns the story took and some of the new elements it chucked in there.
I think it was definitely better storytelling than the previous Halo 2 and Halo 3. But yeah, you're right, I think it got a bum rap as well. Sam, what really disappointed you this year, mate?
Well, I'm going to have to sort of blame you and Drew on this one, was because you guys got me hyped up for Wanted Weapons of Fate. Looked really, really good.
That's because we had,
and that came out, that and it year? Was an absolute piece of crap.
I just remember what I hated the most.
That's because
this year.
We had. That's because we had time to film the podcast, and we just wanted to talk.
That was almost the worst game I played this year, except for Terminator.
Ah, you hit me at the post.
So movie games, hey?
Yeah, well, movie games that look good that turned out terrible.
Do you know what got Drew so excited about Wanted was the cover art when it was first released, which I really liked as well. I think that was you brought that to our attention, Aaron. In fact, you turned me on to the comic book as well, which I read all the way through after that.
And realised it had nothing to do with the movie.
I didn't even see the movie. I started watching the movie, but I did like the book.
And for me, it was definitely Terminator Salvation. I remember actually doing the article, having the screenshots from the developer, and I was looking at them thinking, this is incredible. This is Gears of War 2 with John O'Connor. You know, Christian Bale's going to be doing the movie.
Irish version of Terminator, yeah, John O'Connor?
That's going to be, you know, the movie's going to be awesome. The game's just going to be an extension of that. And let's face it, who did not play it just to get 1,000 achievement points? Everyone just played it to whore it or get a platinum trophy, let's face it.
I didn't play it at all.
I've never even played it, yeah.
It was the biggest piece of dog shit. The only thing that probably left me a little bit more disappointed, because I already knew Terminator was going to suck by the time I got it, because I was just whoring it for achievement points, was Ghostbusters. Because I had to get it on PlayStation.
So, what is it about movie games that base their gameplay on the Gears of War format? And they just turn out to be rubbish. I mean, Ghostbusters was a third person, similar to Gears of War, Wanted. There's a few that just... And they just don't work. Like, Terminator was the same way. 50 Cent Blood on the Sand was a Gears of War ripoff.
I think it's because Gears of War sold 5 million copies.
Yeah, my absolute fan. And it's because it's a dead easy formula to copy.
Sure, yeah.
Put some waist high blocks everywhere and get everyone to run up and use them as cover. Then you've got a game, really.
Yeah.
Well, let's make one. Surely it can't be that hard.
That Aussie Gears of War.
That Aussie everything. Because I'm not creative enough.
I had a lot of games that really bummed me out this year, actually, that I was quite hopeful for. Probably the worst would be Stormrise, and we'll probably make some enemies in the Australian gaming community talking about this, but I was so excited for it, and the control scheme. And the control scheme, in its defense, was pretty solid, and it would have worked if the game had maybe been kept in the oven and maybe a month or two more, but just there were so many little problems with the pathways for the units and getting stuck all the time and the difficulty level, and yeah, it really bummed me out. I mean, I bought it on day one. I was so excited for it, had it pre-ordered and everything, and came home and played it for about 2 hours and thought, oh god, I'm gonna have to go to the website and mention that, you know, maybe I oversold it.
Keratisobatometer every single week.
That's right.
Like, that's, I remember when we were doing the podcast, and every week, and I even started to get excited because I saw some of the videos and with the cameras. I thought, oh wow, this is, you know, I'm not a big RTS kind of fan, but it looked like it was putting you in the action a lot more. And then you know, after hearing you talk about it or not talking about it, I think that was the biggest thing. I went, wow. That was
we'll talk into some of the developers after, you know, after the dust had sort of settled and it got the disappointing reviews that it did. They were still really quite proud of the game, and they felt that, you know, it wasn't classified correctly, like people were calling it an RTS game when it shouldn't be.
I don't think that was a problem. I don't think it was a misclassification was what was going on.
Mismarketing, sorry, I misspoke. But yeah, okay, so it just was the balls that it was.
Yeah.
Because I didn't play it, despite the fact that it apparently had the Brisbane River in it. That's what I heard.
Played it.
Wow. You notice that, Aaron? So you can swim down the river.
I didn't notice that. It would have been happy if there was a bush turkey you could run over at some point.
A tit bird. So, what about you, Sam? Do we already do you?
Wanted.
Yeah, mine was wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Short attention span there, sorry.
I'm still drunk from this Friday night.
That's understandable.
Speaking of disappointments, and not to say that it is, but has anyone else actually managed to get a chance to play Brutal Legend yet in its entirety?
Not in its entirety, but when I had my week or so off, I got a good chunk of it done. That disappointed you, mate?
Oh, well, I was seeing, did anyone else feel that it was a letdown? Not what I expected, not up to the standard I thought?
Yeah, it wasn't.
It sort of started off quite strong, and then the reason I didn't finish playing is because I didn't feel compelled to keep playing it. Like, the humour sort of died off a bit, and everything got a little bit repetitive, and the story just wasn't pulling me through. And yeah, no, it certainly didn't live up to the hype.
Is that because of the RTS elements that they seem to shoehorn into the game after they market it as an action game?
I don't think they shoehorned it in. I think they originally started out as an RTS, but because it took a little while to actually get into that part, like the tutorial and the introduction of the game, it takes a good couple of hours before you even start to touch on that. Isn't that right?
I think I've played about 4 or 5 hours off, and I've hardly done any of the RTS stuff. Mm.
So, I mean, the premise was great, and I think the voice acting and all of the different cameos were fantastic. In fact, you might even hear about it a little bit later on in the show. But maybe it is something that I need to go back and through and play. Did you like it, Aaron?
I liked what I played, but as you said, it was one of those games that doesn't compel you to keep playing. And I played so many games this year that were like books that I could not put down, that I just had to keep playing through to find out what happened, and Brutal Legend was not one of those. And I really thought it was going to be, and that kind of let me down. The RTS elements didn't bother me as much as the fact it didn't stay as original as some of Schafer's games have in the past, and didn't stay fresh as you kept going.
Yeah.
I think it was like a good idea that got strung along a lot further than it should have done.
And because, once again, much like Stormrise, you amped it pretty hard. It got me very excited. You even redefined, I believe, freaking awesome, and you unprecedented, saying that no other game will be known as that anymore, because this is the game that's now will be known as freaking awesome from now on. And yeah, it just didn't great. It just, I haven't finished it.
So this is basically the call out show, is it? This is the show where we say, hey,
tone
you were wrong about this.
Turn it down, man.
Well, just wait until you play the Saboteur, and then you can all come on next podcast. Go, God, that was shit. What are you talking about? You suck. Get out of here.
Well, I'm sure if we can remember it for the whole next year. So let's talk about some of the games that that came out at the beginning of the year that won't even be mentioned at the when we get into nominating our awards. Resident Evil, as good as we thought it was. Derek, this is spoiling it, but it doesn't rate, because the games that came out at the end of this year just swamped it.
Yep. A busy schedule again at the end of the year.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of games pushed back to 2010. That's been quite the issue, hasn't it, Sam?
Well, there was probably about 7 or 8 games that got pushed back to the start of 2010 that were meant to come out this holiday season, which is sort of a good thing because there were so many games to buy already. But there are so many games that now got pushed back that we've got to wait another couple of months for. And I think it was mainly because of one big, massive game that I'm sure that will be mentioned later, that seemed to sell about 5 million copies in about 24 hours that was the reason everyone pushed it back.
Wii Fit.
It was Wii Fit.
Maybe it was the Jillian Michaels version of Wii Fit.
I've got big man hands. Pointing you in direction what to do.
Well, one of the other big games that seemed to maybe not live up to expectations as much as it was hyped up to be was something like Killzone 2, which was probably one of the biggest PlayStation exclusives ever since the system was launched. Finally came out, and the reviews, while they were mostly pretty good, it wasn't that Halo killer as it was hyped up to be.
Well, I think the true test for a game and how good it is whether people are still playing it, you know, months and months after. Like, as I said, with Halo 3 ODST, it's certainly been eclipsed by Modern Warfare 2, but I stopped playing that online a long time before Call of Duty came out. Are people still playing Killzone 2, Sam?
Well, yeah, they are. It's really surprising that every time I've put it in, I thought, oh, I might have a couple of games. There's always been a lot of games, and even on Australian servers. So there's been no problems getting in games. There's probably been more people playing that than there's been playing Uncharted 2 online.
Yeah, right. Another one that came out early on in the year, which a lot of people like, was Street Fighter 4, which has been getting some... It's getting a sequel or an expansion. Actually, I'm not totally up with it, but Super Street Fighter 4 is going to release fairly soon, yeah?
Yeah, the same game, tweaked. Some of the moves are tweaked, and I think the balance has shifted a bit, and they've added 4 new characters.
So when you say the balance, is it going to be hard to finish on easy?
Oh, I'm sure they'll still have that with bastard Seth? At the end of the game. What's his name, Seth?
Is it Seth?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know, I didn't think anyone would be able to create an end character as annoying as some of the ones I've had in Tekken, but he was such a...
Teleportation is just the developer's way of saying, fuck you.
and when you're actually beating him, he does the move where he creates a black hole in his gut and sucks you into it.
Oh, is that,
and it takes
is that
75% of your health.
And it takes off almost all your health, yeah.
That is rubbish. Yeah. So we talk about Resident Evil 5, Street Fighter 4. What were some of the other games that came out early this year that people just aren't playing anymore?
I don't know what the online's like at the moment, but something like Red Faction, when it came out, seemed to have a pretty big following online because of its fun multiplayer, just running around destroying buildings. So no sniper nest was safe for very long if you had a rocket launcher in your hand.
Yeah, which that's a good point, because Red Faction was fantastic online. With such a saturated market, with games seem to be releasing all the time, particularly towards the end of this year and by the looks of it, early next year, you really have to, developers really have to try and keep things fresh with downloadable content and updates and a good solid online multiplayer. Red Faction was awesome online, but like probably a lot of other people, I'm not playing it anymore.
No, I'm not playing it either, and that playdate was probably our most successful one that we ran. It was probably the one that I had the most fun at. It was easy to set up a room. It was easy. Yeah, the connection stayed. We were able to get the friends in there easy, and we also had a blast. No matter whether you're versing your friends or you're working together as a team, it was just an absolute really fun one. And it was actually one of the few games where I actually dived straight into multiplayer and preferred to play that over the single player experience, because I typically like to finish a game before I attempt it online. I like to hone the skills, but with that one, it's so intuitive. You just worked out which weapons and things to use, and you're just able to pull you through it.
I do have one more game on my head as well that was, I think, I'm pretty sure it was released this year, and it was a bit disappointing. In Australia it was released this year anyway. It was SOCOM Confrontation.
Oh, yes.
I know you don't like it, Mick.
I've got a copy, though.
I haven't got it myself, but I've played it a fair few times at a mate's place.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look fantastic, but the strange thing is, that game is the game that's played most on PlayStation Network.
Yep, that doesn't surprise me at all, because the guys that when I was playing it, and the reason I got it is because some of the really, really diehard guys told me that how good it is. And I think it's one of those obsessive type games like Counter-Strike, where they're just real grassroots type military sims, and they're so deep that people are just still playing. But I didn't know that it was still the highest played game on the PlayStation.
Well, about 3 months ago, they came out and said that that was the most played game over something like Killzone 2, Call of Duty 4, you know, games on the PlayStation that have just got massive communities. That SOCOM was a massive surprise that it's the most played game.
I haven't even seen it in the video shop, because I hear it, the mention of it every once in a while from the forums, and I've gone to check it out, because I do quite like some of the hardcore war games.
If you don't like updates, don't get it.
Okay.
There's about 2 or 3 gigs worth of updates that they've released already for it.
Well, is it also fair to say that the community is pretty, I guess, passionate about it? That if you're letting the team down at all, you get a bit of a verbal kind of slogging. I've had some friends pick it up, and they just felt really intimidated about trying to get in and have a play, just because. You know, they kick you off your team if you're not pulling your weight, and or if you get too many deaths and things like that, whereas that's typically not the case with your Modern Warfare 2s and things like that. But have you experienced that, Sam? Because I haven't played it. This is just off what I've heard.
Well, when I was playing it at my mate's place, it was a little bit of if you took too long changing your loadout, because one of the good things is that you can swap your guns in the middle of the game. So instead of having 5 or 6 loadouts that you go into the game and they're locked, so if you're getting owned by a sniper and you want a sniper in back, and any of your loadouts don't have a sniper rifle, say in Call of Duty, you get caught out a bit. But if you are playing SOCOM, you can swap it around. If you take too long, they kick you from the game. They don't get very happy with you.
Okay.
Well, I think it's because the people that are still playing it, there's probably not many new adapters jumping on, so they've all been playing it for so long, and like I said before, it is a hardcore gamer's game. But yeah, hey, do you want my copy, Sam? I'll send it to you, mate.
Oh, if you want, that's fine.
I'll send it to you. You can tell us all about it on the 2010 reunion show.
Look, I know we're going a little bit over time, and it was one that I just wasn't interested in picking up, but what about Operation Flashpoint? Do you consider that a disappointment of the year?
Well, I didn't get to play it too much. But from what I did play, I really enjoyed it. It certainly isn't the Modern Warfare 2 game. It's very different. It's exactly like how I remember Operation Flashpoint being, where it's super realistic and very strategic. Using your map a lot to direct your troops around, and I actually did quite enjoy it. But alas, it had to go back to the video shop, and I haven't wanted to go back and pick it up yet. Who else has played Operation Flashpoint 2? Dragon Rising.
It's on my list, but I haven't actually had a chance to play it yet.
Oh, I think I played it for about 10 minutes, because the video store owner was actually playing it when I went there, so I had a bit of a bash at it. But it was, I think it was the marketing that got people disappointed and made you think that it was going to be a Call of Duty, you know, successor or something like that. Whereas all the PC market knew exactly what it was going to be, because they've had that sort of game 5 or 6 times since then.
Yeah, definitely a game that was always going to be bigger on the PC, I think. Though, from what I played the Xbox 360 version. It was great. It was easy to control, it was easy to manipulate your troops, and I didn't notice any of the shortcomings that you might find with a game that is supposed to be played on the PC. I think they did quite a good job.
A little late for that now.
Uncharted was really the first game on the PlayStation 3 that proved, without a doubt, that the less powerful Xbox 360 had a lot to live up to if it were to compete with Sony's processing behemoth. It's no surprise, then, that this year's Best Looking Game Award goes to its sequel, Uncharted 2, Among Thieves. Taking advantage of the PS3's increased capacity Blu-ray discs and large hard drive, and using an upgraded version of the same engine that powered Uncharted, Uncharted 2 stands apart as the prettiest looking game of 2009. Obviously, enough time had passed for Naughty Dog to learn to truly squeeze as much out of the cell's processor as they could, allowing for real-time moving environments, more realistic textures, and believable animations. Impressive, considering Uncharted 2 doesn't require an install.
Lucky me.
Alright, so Uncharted 2, the best looking game for 2009 as voted by the writing staff for that as a game. So it didn't get your vote though, Aaron.
No, I pegged Killzone 2 for this. Uncharted 2 is a stupendously gorgeous game, and I think I gave just about every other category to Uncharted 2 on my list. But Killzone 2, I think just the fire effects, the particle effects, the mist and the gas in the air, and when you're flying down on those bizarre flying trolleys that they used to drop the troops down onto the planet, which like still makes no sense to me why they would do that. They don't even have seatbelts on it, for Christ's sake, and they're dropping from a spaceship onto the surface. Anyway, and the animations of the characters just look brilliant. And I just thought Killzone was probably the prettiest game I saw this year.
Well, I think Uncharted 2 sort of pips ahead of Killzone was the cutscenes and the animation and the acting of the cutscenes in Uncharted 2. I think that would, you know, they're the best I've ever seen for that sort of thing.
For me, it was easy to choose Uncharted 2 just because the sheer amount of different environments. I definitely agree. Killzone 2 is a very good-looking first-person shooter with all the textures and explosions and things like that. But it was very grey. I don't remember it varying too much from that. Whereas with Uncharted 2, just you're in the snow, you're in the forest. Yeah, you're here there. You're on the top of buildings. You're on the train. It was just amazing, and I never really noticed any problems with like tearing or frame rate issues and stuff. It was just perfect. It was just really, really impressive.
See, I think Killzone 2, in terms of post-processing effects, like, you know, your particle effects and all that sort of stuff, was better than Uncharted 2, but overall, in terms of colour, which Killzone 2 was basically grey and orange, Uncharted 2 beats the pants off of it. And as well as the animations in Killzone were fairly simple because it was just a bloke running most of the time. Uncharted 2 had its massive platforming sections as well as a cover system to animate, and it just looked so fantastic.
Yeah, they really squeezed a lot out of, because the engine, as we said in the introduction, that the engine is basically what they used for the original, but they had the time to tweak it and to get a lot better. And certainly, because the PlayStation 3 has been around for so much longer, I'm sure they had the experience now to get as much out of it as possible. I read somewhere that it uses like 90% of the processing power, 90 to 100% in this game, and every single gigabyte on the Blu-ray drive they need it, with no install time.
Yeah, like every chapter, just bang, 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 bang. It's really impressive.
And to compare that to Killzone 2, where you had a level that was loaded, you'd run and it would just pause, and it almost looked like it froze for a couple of seconds, except for a little loading bar down the bottom, and then it would load and you'd go from there. Like, in the middle of a level, even though the game looks so good, it's a little bit disruptive, whereas Uncharted 2, after that first loading screen, you can play from the beginning to the end of the game without a loading screen if you watch all the cutscenes.
And also Killzone was forcing you to just go through this tunnel. That was how they were also getting around their loading times as well, by going through just a really boring looking tunnel. There'd be no enemies or anything in it, and then you'd come out into a new part of the world. So it was smart in a way, but it also you knew exactly why you were just going through a tunnel with no enemies for.
Also, the draw distance in Uncharted 2, there are a few points where, you know, you're hanging on the top of a building, or spoilers, where you're running across a collapsing bridge, and just the detail and the scenery behind you is incredible. You don't get that many views like that in Killzone 2.
Yeah, I would have said the same thing, actually. Uncharted 2 was probably the favourite thing for me, was just when you got to a high point in a level and you could see the entire level spread out below you, and you see a temple of some miles off in the distance, and knew at some point that you'd get there just within that one level. I don't think you need to mention spoiler alert for a collapsing bridge, because I think there's a collapsing bridge in every Uncharted game.
All two of them.
Let's do every.
That's true.
Call him out.
Sorry.
Man, we're getting so bitchy.
Out of the darkness comes an evil that will destroy us all.
An impressive soundtrack and sound effects reel are one thing, but basing your entire game around the genre of heavy metal pretty much assures you that you're a shoo-in for the Best Audio Award, as long as you do it right. Lucky for Tim Schafer, Brutal Legend does it right.
A legend.
Next to the star of Brutal Legend, Jack Black, is its incredible soundtrack featuring the likes of Judas Priest, Black Sabbath, and Rob Zombie that will melt your face off.
Not sure, but I like how that sounds.
Starring Jack Black.
Brutal Legend splits its speaker time gloriously between side-splitting comedy and eardrum-pounding metal. While it's arguably one of 2009's most disappointing titles, there's no doubt that at least Brutal Legend got the soundtrack right.
What the hell?
And Ozzy Osbourne.
It's about fucking time.
Yeah, time for a mosh pit. Ass Kickers Unite! Oh, yeah.
Brutal Legend.
So are you the keeper of the sacred beer tree? Dream job.
Okay, so this one, without a shadow of a doubt, was Brutal Legend for me, for the Best Audio for 2009. Derek, but you were about to say something off air?
I was. This actually wasn't my choice. But unfortunately, I can't remember what it was. Strangely, I remember that you had ODST as your favourite. And the score in that was really impressive. But I do agree that the voice acting, Jack Black, you got to love the guy. It was just second.
Hang on, let me just get this knife out of my back.
was second to none. And the soundtrack was just rocking. And it just it suited the game so well. And like before all those interviews with Tim Schafer and Jack Black, you just felt like there was a lot of passion and care went into what songs were at what time. And
no, well, I'll tell you why, because yeah, you're right. Originally, when I first, the first thing that popped into my mind for Best Audio was Halo 3 ODST, because it had that fantastic score over the top of it that was definitely one of the best for this year. Where Brutal Legend comes into its own is the whole game is based around that genre of music. The voice acting is fantastic. The songs that are throughout, it's just, I mean, it hands down the winner for me. And I think you agree, Aaron.
Absolutely. I think it's probably indicative of the fact that we're all sad, old people in our late 20s and early 30s who kind of were young when metal was relevant and cool. So we hear Brutal Legend and go, yeah.
Remember, don't put me in your age group. I'm not even 20 yet, Aaron. It's okay.
Sorry, Sam. But the overriding votes then were sad oldies who, you know, remember when headbanging was actually fun and not just a way to get something you wanted from your parents. And, you know, you did it recreationally. Like, I remember waking up many Sunday mornings after going out on the weekend or a concert or something and having an incredibly sore neck and having to put a heat pack on it.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that about you, mate.
Head bang. And I had a friend who was in a band who was quite hardcore, and we used to go to the pubs and we'd egg them on by being the front of band headbangers to get everyone else to headbang, and it was pretty embarrassing looking back. Flannel shirt face, black jeans.
We are in the Josh Pike now, mate. That's a little bit
yeah, I've soft. Mellowed right out. Take all my anger out of my kids now.
So what was your nomination for this one, Sam?
Well, not having Brutal Legend, I can't really say that, but I do like heavy metal and I know I'd like that soundtrack. I was tossing up between three games, actually. One was Halo ODST, which was already mentioned because of its wicked orchestral soundtrack. Killzone 2, which had a similar orchestral soundtrack. But Uncharted 2 with its brilliant. I have to say it's brilliant. Because I love that music. The first one and the second one,
yeah.
They changed it up just enough that you can tell one's the first one, one's the second one. When I load up that game and I hear that music, I know it's Uncharted, and I just it brings back memories of certain plot points, just because the music is so memorable. And it's pretty sad, but I know I'm gonna buy the I'm getting a new iPod. I'm waiting, but I know I'm gonna buy the soundtracks for both those games, and probably Mirror's Edge.
You can get the soundtrack for Uncharted 2, can you?
Yeah, and the first one.
I remember when they had the soundtrack from Red Alert, and I was when I was in high school, and my a mate of mine got a VB Commodore, and it had an awesome stereo. And I went to a Seventh Day Adventist school, so they weren't exactly hardcore. And the CD that they put on in the car to show the subwoofer was the Red Alert soundtrack. And I run a video game website, and I would still feel more comfortable telling people that in a public setting than telling them that I use Red Alert for my sound system. Which I hope they're listening. Hey guys, but to further clarify the best audio, it really is the whole package. And we come back to Brutal Legend, where the voice acting comes into it, the overall soundtrack, the different sound effects. Brutal Legend was all about the audio, and as I said, for me, that's the winner. Also, I'm editor, so that's the winner.
And I'm just sitting here looking through emails, searching, and I'm...
What?
I just can't remember what I voted for. It obviously was really deserving.
You're not live on the air, man. You don't have to tell people this. maybe we stop recording and we can come back and you can sort it out.
With the pressure to offer a complete package of single player, multiplayer, and cooperative play, the danger for a game to be a jack-of-all-trades and master of none is enough to sink even the biggest games. Uncharted 2, Among Thieves, successfully evades this stigma.
This guy doesn't give up! Get down! That's what I'm talking about!
Uncharted 2 is a wild, cinematic rollercoaster of outstanding gameplay, clever level design, and sharp story that is a testament to Naughty Dog's attention to detail and proof that video games as a form of storytelling is still absolutely possible.
Well, shock horror there, boys, to steal a line from off-air Aaron Mitchell. I think this is probably the most obvious one. And in an industry where developers seem to try and cram every single aspect of a game with multiplayer, cooperative play, and single player, sometimes games get diluted in their individual aspects. But Uncharted 2 is all about the single player, despite the fact that it does have all of those other things. Sam, mate, lead it off.
The best single player of the year was Uncharted 2. It had a story that was worth playing the game for. Even if you didn't like the gameplay, you didn't like the characters, the story itself was worth playing the game for, which most games you don't get. You play it because, hey, this game's good, and the story is something there that is just enough to keep you going. You go back to Uncharted 2 not because of the gameplay, not because of the graphics, it's because of the story, and it immerses you so well into the game. And just cutscenes that happen at any point without any loading, moving on to the next environment, which might look completely different, just in the middle of one cutscene is just insane.
Yeah, well, you talked before, Aaron, about games that really compel you to keep going. You said, like, books that keep you going through. To be honest, if a game really doesn't pull me through, I can't find the time to finish it. Uncharted 2 certainly sounds like wasn't like that. It was the one that pulled you through.
Yeah, I think 3 nights I had it knocked on the head, and I'm playing on normal, and it was just, I had to know what happened next. After, well, can't mention any of the plot, can we, because of spoilers.
But, spoilers everywhere.
Something would happen, and I'd look at my watch and realize it was 1 o'clock in the morning and think, shit, look, I really should go to bed. And I'd be thinking about it all the next day and be running home from work to stick it back on and then get shouted at my wife for just coming in the door and putting the PlayStation on. and sit down and say, look, I just need to know what happens with the train or with the helicopter or with the building, or you've just got this bit and there's this puzzle and this guy just got shot and this guy didn't, and I'll have to find out. Just give me a minute. It was just, yeah, it just propelled me along. I think the conclusion was a little bit... Sorry?
Just condense your spoilers into, yeah, a 10-second thing so I can cut it all out.
Yeah.
What the...
So after all that happened...
Somebody dies. Somebody gets shot.
What?
But what you were just saying, Aaron, is, you know, you were mentioning some of the major set pieces of the game, and I can't remember a game throwing this many memorable set pieces at me all in, you know, what is probably a 12 to 15 hour single player, and it just...
Yeah.
Every hour you're doing something that you could just say, whoa, that was awesome.
Oh, maybe even every 20 minutes you had something that was just you had to see it through, you had to find out what happened.
Well, the other game that was up for it, in my eyes, was certainly the Modern Warfare 2 single player. It was epic and cinematic, but it sort of got a bit gimmicky towards the end, where you did jump from level to level, from set piece to set piece. What they did this time around, as opposed to with Call of Duty 4, is there wasn't just the running and shooting. Like there was, I mean, there's a boat scene. I'm sure you've seen in the trailer, so that's not a spoiler. There's a whole lot of stuff that isn't just the typical Call of Duty running and shooting.
Yeah, I agree. It was just fantastic. I think the perfect way to kind of describe it is, it had a fantastic story that wasn't too intrusive. Like, say, for example, Metal Gear Solid 4, the movie. The story was interesting. It added to the game, while not just being the only portion of it. And I actually thought the multiplayer was pretty impressive in it. But it was definitely just one of the best single player games where you could just sit down and play it through, because it was like you were playing with a friend, because you were playing with Drake and so on. It was just, yeah, really, really, really good.
Right, so yep. You're talking about Uncharted again.
Yes.
Sorry. I thought you were talking about Modern Warfare 2.
Until he said Drake as well.
Yeah. Well,
that's a spoiler. That Drake's in Modern Warfare 2.
Derek! You're ruining it for me.
His voice is. Isn't his voice in every game or something?
Yes. Yes.
And what I also wanted to mention, because I mentioned on the forum as well, that I thought the story was better in Uncharted 2 than Indiana Jones 4 was.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, George Lucas, hire the writers from Naughty Dog.
Kick him in the balls from me.
And instead of Harrison Ford, get Nolan North.
He's busy recording for about 8 other games, so he won't be available.
Well, on that topic, they are making an Uncharted movie, and I'm really hoping that they create a new adventure and they don't try to crib off one of the existing game plots, because they're really done and dusted. They can't do them any better.
They made the comic that they're releasing at the moment, the motion comic, into the movie.
Yeah.
Did anyone else watch the first of that one? They released it free on the PlayStation Network.
Yeah, I saw that actually. Yeah, it was really well done. Yeah.
Well, that's a good point, Aaron, that you bring up, is that and that's a testament to just how good these games are in terms of single player, is that if they were to remake them, they couldn't possibly do them any better than how they are in the video game, and that's a testament to just how good they are.
They'd have to cut it down to almost nothing. Like, they'd probably have to cut out half the plot to make it into a movie.
Could we make it interactive, where we all have to try and solve the puzzle? Like a 3D type movie?
Choose your own adventure.
Left!
I think they should be commended as well. It's easy to go on and on about the plot and the characters, which are all great, but I think the behind the scenes, underneath all that, Naughty Dog did a really fantastic job of making the pacing of the game kind of just keep rolling. Like, you never... With the first Uncharted, there was sort of stop-start action. You'd have this swarm of guys come pouring out of the cave and stuff like that, but Uncharted 2, you were always moving and you were always heading towards a goal.
See, now, and you were just talking about the live action and stuff, and it reminded me of, I might be the only one nerdy enough to actually have watched it, but there was a making of Uncharted 2 where they were recording all the voices and the motion capture. They do it at the exact same time. So the reason that these characters seem to interact so well is because the voice actors are doing the acting and the motion capturing at the same time for the cutscenes.
Apparently they ad-libbed a lot of it too.
With alternating developers working on Activision's war shooter franchise, the sequel to the only multiplayer game to truly compete with the mighty Halo 3 could have easily been seen as an expansion add-on rather than a sequel. But Infinity Ward have added just enough to Modern Warfare 2's multiplayer to make it worth the price of admission. Package ready for direction. Show us where you want it. Infinity Ward's heavy community focus, led by Mr. 402 himself, made it possible to really listen to their audience, tweak their game without messing it up, and deliver a solid multiplayer package that is better than its highly successful predecessor. But only just. Still, it's enough to keep you playing it night after night for at least the next 12 months, and is easily this year's best multiplayer experience. So is anybody shocked that best multiplayer game of 2009 is Modern Warfare 2? I'm not.
Not really.
No, definitely not.
Could anyone really be shocked?
I think Red Faction had not a bad go at the post, but yeah, Modern Warfare.
I think Uncharted did pretty well, seeming that it copied Modern Warfare 1 and put it into a third-person game with its boosters and all that sort of stuff.
That's an interesting way to put it. In fact, I haven't played Uncharted 2. The multiplayer.
Shame on you.
To be honest, I haven't really played Uncharted 2 yet. I'm playing through Uncharted 1 at the moment, and I love it. So Modern Warfare 2, I think for me, the secret to an excellent multiplayer game is how many people are playing it and how long they play it for. Obviously, we can't really gauge that, given that it was only released a few weeks ago? But
yeah, 4 weeks ago now.
What they've done is they've taken Call of Duty 4, the original Modern Warfare. They haven't really changed too much of it. They've sort of found the perfect balance of changing just enough so that it was just past the point of expansion pack, so it doesn't have the Rainbow Six Vegas 2 sort of vibe about it. But they kept what everybody loved about it. And what did it sell? 500 million copies or something spastic. It's for the multiplayer. Everybody knows it's for the multiplayer, and it's great that they put a single player game onto it that was so fantastic, and certainly Spec Ops. Laurie, off air, we were talking about how good that is. Derek and I have been playing it through together, and we love it. But really, Modern Warfare 2, you get it for the multiplayer, and people will still be playing it 12 months down the track.
Yeah, until the next Call of Duty's out.
See, that's what I wanted to ask you, Mick. I know you played Call of Duty 4 a lot, and I played Call of Duty 4 a lot, but I haven't played the multiplayer besides Spec Ops, because I haven't actually bought the game. I'm probably I'm the only gamer in Australia that doesn't have it on any system. But have they changed the formula enough in online multiplayer? Because I know they've added a lot of things for those people that were playing Call of Duty 4. And I had a few of them on my Xbox list that every time they logged on, the only thing they were playing is Call of Duty 4. And the only thing they're playing now is Modern Warfare 2. Now, have they changed it enough to keep those people playing it for 2 years until Infinity Ward release their next game?
That's right, they have, yeah. They've changed it enough. They've added enough, actually. One of the issues was with the ranking system. When you're matchmaking and you're trying to get into a game with people who are a similar level to you, that was kind of a moot point, because it was so familiar for people who played Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare that your skills carried across. It was exactly the same. So for a long time, until people really settled into it, that you were playing with guys who were way too good for you just because your ranks were even on paper. But yeah, they have changed enough, but they haven't changed a whole lot.
And I know on release there was a lot of complaints about lag. Have they fixed that?
The game is so good that despite its shortcomings, and there are quite a few, there was the whole scandal with the PC community getting the matchmaking system, and we touched on this before, where with Infinity Ward have done, where they've made the same game and put it on all three consoles. There's no difference, or the matchmaking system is no exception. It's the matchmaking system for Aussies is flawed. The only way to play with another group of Aussies definitely is to check your recent friends played with, find the Aussies and jump into their game. If you're playing a game and an American jumps in, they'll hijack the host, and you'll go from your four green bars to one red bar or two yellow bars. But despite all of that, it's still the multiplayer game.
There've been a few exciting co-op games released in 2009, but nothing that felt as new and fresh as Borderlands, a game that took the party-based, loot-driven adventures of such classics as Diablo and roughly mashed them together with the pure shooter mechanics of a Halo or Call of Duty. The result could have easily been a twisted abomination shambling onto consoles before being driven away by pitchforks and torches. Instead, Borderlands was an exciting and enjoyable hybrid of aesthetic and shooter gameplay. While Borderlands was a blast in single player, with a good group of friends, each using the four classes available which complement each other so well, Borderlands is a whole new level of fun, and you'll be more than happy to repeat quests with friends in tow.
So the best co-op has gone to Borderlands, a game that is heavy focus on co-op. And is almost, Aaron, and you'll be able to tell me because you've played this the most out of all of us, it's a game you can't really play by yourself.
You can play it by yourself, to be certain. It's got a good single player, which is solid and enjoyable, and there's a lot to do. But it really comes alive with multiplayer. Makes it a hell of a lot more fun. Especially when you've got multiplayer, if you've got several people and everybody's playing as a different class, so you support each other more and you played your role.
Yeah, the key to an awesome cooperative experience is the experiences that you have, you know, with all your friends. Derek, Resident Evil 5 was your choice, and certainly it was that Aussie half game of the year for 2009. But I went with Borderlands in the end as well because I agree with Aaron.
Yeah, wow. I guess when you think about it, I'm trying to get the taste of disgust out of my mouth, I guess, and that's why I'm finding it hard to
disgust
even to say anything. Okay, when we look on it on the basis, four-player co-op obviously has to trump two-player co-op.
Just by sheer numbers,
sheer
that's
numbers,
true.
Okay?
Yes.
Okay, but we don't see Left 4 Dead 2 getting a mention in anyway, because it's watered down, thanks for the OFC.
We can talk about that, though.
But I personally think the best cooperative experience is really a personal choice, because the fun I had playing with Mick, and we're still talking about it now, there's so many jokes, just because I was very heavy-fisted, I was kind of the quasi-leader of the game, and I'd be firing off orders. It even actually, Tori from the site hadn't finished the game, and I offered to go back in and play it start to finish with him with all my unlimited ammo and weapon, yeah, just because I'd be happy to play it again.
And I told him not to.
And you told him not to, and he didn't, because that's kind of the experience that Mick and I had. So
because that's the passion that you unleashed when you were playing this game. And it is a fantastic game. It's, in fact, for me, a close second place is Resident Evil.
Definitely, I agree.
Resident Evil 5. But the way where Borderlands exceeds is that It has the four separate classes, and if you it really makes you work as a team, and it's really like an MMO, isn't it, Alex?
Yeah, well, it's more like a quest based party thing where you get together with a friend and you go and, you know, polish off some of his quests if he's a few levels below you, and swap weapons and gear and stuff like that, as opposed to an on the rail shooter experience, which is really what Resident Evil 5 is.
That's right.
You're just going from point A to point B. I mean, with Borderlands, you've got an open world to explore.
And three teammates to control.
Has Derek burst into flames yet? That's what I'm aiming for.
You can see the rage in his eyes.
I'm just sitting here going, that's not true. That's not true. Open world doesn't automatically make it better just because it's open.
No, that's true. I don't think Eric's saying that.
Yeah.
But for four people in the RPG experience, I think there wasn't really any other game that offered that on consoles anyway. this year.
It's pretty unique in that regard.
And the fact it was a shooter, which was massive amounts of fun, and fighting giant monsters, driving cars around, running over people. It's just good fun.
Yeah, personally, I haven't played Borderlands co-op. I've played it single player, and I'm only up to level 17, so I haven't played it nearly as much as you have, Aaron. But I can see how the game would just come in its own in four-player co-op, just because co-op's always a lot funner, lot more fun than just walking around in what is a somewhat empty world. Because when you're walking between your quests, it can get fairly quiet.
Yeah.
With your buddies, it would make it a lot better. But I think we're missing a few games that we haven't actually mentioned yet. Stuff like Uncharted 2, which had fantastic three-player co-op based on the single player. And obviously, we know what one single player. And then Modern Warfare 2, Spec Ops.
Spec Ops as well, yeah.
Spec Ops is very good.
Which was my vote, because I love Modern Warfare, like Call of Duty 4. And that sort of feels like, hey, let's grab a mate and let's just kill these guys together instead of having to put up with some of the bullshit that you get in online games.
And I like with Spec Ops too how they've taken things from the original Modern Warfare and allowed you to play through them, like the Ghillies in the Mist level, where you can play through with you and your mate. It's not exactly the same, but it's exact same setting and it's the same sort of feel. And when you're counting down to snipe, exactly like Captain Price was doing in the original. In fact, we should mention that Tori, who couldn't join us this morning, actually made a cameo celebrity appearance on the ABC's Good Game and was in the Spec Ops section of their gameplay capture when they were reviewing the game. I still remember. We have to get that recorded on VHS or something and write on it in nice Nico and send it to him as a present.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
I actually play a lot of split screen with my son Cameron, who's 10. Is he 10? Yes, he's 10. And we did that exact thing, playing the sniper missions. We're sitting on the couch there saying, okay, you take the guy on the left, you take the guy on the right, okay, one, two, three. My wife's sitting at the end of the couch with her magazine sort of watching us over the top going, is this entirely okay? I mean, did you have to shoot that guy? And did you have to shoot his dog? And it's like, well, you know, we could sneak past, but more points if we shoot them.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Sorry,
just when I was just going to say that, like, when you get it down to the fine art and you just hear one succinct sound, it's just so rewarding.
Yeah,
you're not in the same room, but you almost just look to your left to, you know, smile to go, yeah, we nailed that section. So
you've got a cardboard cut out of me and I of you.
This is true.
Yeah, but he doesn't sit on the couch properly. He just sort of lays there.
He doesn't
awkwardly
bend at the knees. It's,
and you've sort of tied a controller around his neck with a charge kit.
That is true, but maybe I keep that talk to my therapist and not the rest of Australia.
I should probably also mention that if I'd played the unedited version of Left 4 Dead 2, that probably would have been my co-op game of the year. I think IGN gave it 4 out of 10, the Australian version, which is pretty tragic, because Left 4 Dead was definitely the co-op experience of last year, and I really was looking forward to Left 4 Dead 2 being, you know, equally, if not better than the original, and I just refused to play the Australian version until I can get my hands on an import, which probably won't be till after Christmas now.
I'm totally the same. I loved Left 4 Dead 1. Pumped a fair few hours into it. Played a lot with Drew and Mick online. And the second game, it's just not even on my radar, just because of we're getting a watered-down version. So that also, I feel it came out a little bit quick. I think we probably paid a little bit too much for the original.
Yeah, so there's a lot of controversy surrounding this game. Originally, it was the petition that everybody was signing because of how quickly it was coming out. And Sam, this had a pretty interesting story with the OFLC, because probably to get it out close to release date after it did get refused classification, they sort of shot themselves in the foot by submitting a backup version that was completely watered down.
I think in the end it was actually the German version, which was why it was so rubbish. And then that was accepted because there was no gore, and as soon as you shoot a zombie it would disappear on you, so it would look utterly just crap. And then
it truly changed the game, didn't it, because the it lost any sense of
urgency.
Urgency or hecticness. There you go. I'm just showing the lack of education.
Well, it did.
It's part of the gameplay. How many zombies are on screen, all the dead bodies everywhere, the amount of blood going everywhere. It impairs your vision, and the Aussie version just doesn't have that. So it's not the same game, and it deserves the review scores that it's got over here.
Yeah, exactly. And then they tried to bring the unedited version. They submitted that, and that got refused classification, which I'm not sure if it was fair or not, but if... Like, I have played the demo on Steam, and there's a little way to get around that with region coding. And playing it unedited is so much better, but the gore, when you're using a katana or something to slice open a zombie, you can sort of understand their point of view when you can see little bits of flesh popping out of a zombie's, you know, face.
Yeah, sure. But then a game like Modern Warfare 2 gets through, seemingly without a hitch, and you're walking through an airport as a terrorist, which, yes, not the first game to ever do that. Grand Theft Auto, you were bashing guys in the streets with baseball bats, but it had twice the shock factor because, I don't know, because the times that we live in now, it's so shocking.
The inconsistency is incredible. I mean, look at fucking Prototype. You can do to people in Prototype. People running for their lives, and you chase after them, cut them in half, and then both bits. Either, really.
Yeah, but that game was so ugly, it didn't actually have any sort of impact.
You could still tell that you were cutting people into...
Yeah, I know, unlike the pretentious Infamous.
Anyway, but I think it was the detail in Left 4 Dead that they got a bit worried with, because you were going up to somebody, and you have a katana, and you slice an arm off, and you just see little bits... You know, coming out everywhere.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of Soldier of Fortune when I saw that.
That's why I won't play it, because I'm weird. I think it's going to look like Soldier of Fortune, so I'm like, well, I hate it.
But it's not. FPS games are definitely a button, no more than third person games.
Because you're in that perspective, because you're in the first person, yeah.
Well, if you note all the games that tend to get refused classification, like AVP and Fallout got picked. I think it's games that seem to be first person tend to get picked on by the OFLC a lot more than third person games.
Well, Fallout 3, though, wasn't that... That was refused classification because
of the drugs.
Yeah. And that was another example where the game was changed and let back in. It's a different example, though, because to me, the game didn't suffer at all changing the names in it like it did with Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
One game that probably should have got banned without talking about it too much is probably... Gears of War 2, because that's almost as, in terms of the gore factor, is almost as bad as Left 4 Dead, but I think the reason it got through is because they don't look like humans when you're cutting them with a chainsaw.
After spending a lifetime on tours, he can build any stage, tune any guitar, and fix anything. He is a roadie. And by the grace of the metal gods, he wields the power of...
Before Eddie Riggs, the roadie was the sad reject of the rock and roll world, the punchline of many a bad joke. But in the opening moments of Brutal Legend, when the Jack Black voice character tosses his cigarette and runs on the stage, the roadie is transformed. No longer a hanger-on, the roadie becomes the guardian angel of heavy metal, sacrificing themselves to save the face of others.
Don't tell me I've been slaying hot girls this whole time.
Only the power of rock can stop annihilation.
Hell yeah! I mean, hold on a second.
Batman had his own game this year. A great game. But we know Batman. Everyone knows Batman. Eddie Riggs is new, hilarious, and kick-ass. After playing Brutal Legend, the temptation to grow your hair long and wear leather will be strong. You'll want a Brutal Legend belt buckle. You may even snap up a dusty fender from the broom closet and buy an ant. Unless you're a hardcore Jack Black hater, Eddie Riggs is your gaming icon for 2009.
So for me, there was no question. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that it's professional and successful comedic acting from Jack Black here on this one. I mean... Is it Nolan North, the voice actor for every single game out this year?
Yeah, that's right.
He's a fantastic... He is, and there's a reason he does so many, is because he is so good at what he does. And we actually, Derek and I toyed with the idea of giving best character to him because he knows how to voice and do voiceover. But in the end, it's gone to the comedic genius of Jack Black, which Brutal Legend is basically School of Rock, I think, that performance.
Yeah, it's just hilarious. Like, he's one person that just his his voice, as soon as he starts talking, he just makes me laugh. Whatever he's about to say, just because he puts so much passion and excitement into his voice when he's talking about it. I actually didn't have Eddie Riggs down as my character of the year, but I do feel that it's pretty deserving. And just it's setting the tone when the game first started up, and it's like opening up a record, and he's, straight away, you're just like, oh, this is going to be hilarious.
And he's a sweeter character in this than he's ever been in any other movie that I've seen. He's always a little bit cynical and
a little bit nasty.
Yeah, but in this one, he was really sweet, and you really liked him, and he was a great lead character.
He was. I take it you guys haven't seen Kung Fu Panda?
No, I have actually.
Okay.
Because he was funny in that. Yeah.
Contributed the same sort of hero, heart of gold element that he had in Kung Fu Panda, I think. Except he was a tough guy as well, whereas in Kung Fu Panda he was kind of a softie.
Oh, well, I'm going to go see that. Maybe we should get that on Blu-ray. So what was your choice for this year, Sam?
I don't think it would be a surprise to anyone for me to say that it was Nathan Drake from Uncharted 2.
And certainly a close second to Eddie Riggs.
I personally haven't played anything more than the demo of Brutal Legend, and while Eddie Riggs sounded pretty cool, he didn't seem to have the sort of multi-dimensional character that Nathan Drake is, because he's a little bit evil, but then he's also a smart ass and very likable guy, and then he becomes very the ladies man as well, all in sort of one character wrapped up pretty well. And it shows that from the first Uncharted, they almost sort of copied that character for, was it Shadow Complex? Because they used his character and put a lot of his traits into the game.
Just cloned him, really, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised none of the characters from Call of Duty got a mention, because I think they got fleshed out a little bit more in this game. Like characters like Soap.
Yep.
Has really just been identified as like the Call of Duty character now. Yeah. He's just the badass character that everybody wants to play as. And the missions that you do get to play as him are always a bit of a thrill.
Yeah, that's right. And we're in spoiler territory.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to mention something else, but I won't for that reason.
Okay. Good. Yeah, good idea. I think he got it last year. So I think that was cryptic enough for the regular listeners. ...2009 will be remembered as a major year for gaming. Plenty of big-name titles got spin-offs, sequels and expansions. Lots of great games and lots of big scores all over the place. But not really enough innovation. Games that were not sequels tended to be mash-ups of the best bits of other games or reimaginings of old games. The DS is on hand to broaden our horizons with a little gem called Scribblenauts. All up, Scribblenauts is not a great game. The controls are tumour-inducingly annoying and may result in a few broken DSs here and there. The gameplay itself is the interesting part. You solve puzzles by writing down what you need to solve it, and the thing you need appears. There are thousands of available objects to summon, everything from a balloon to a large hadron collider. If you were desperately craving something different this year among the sequels that littered release shelves, Scribblenauts and its quirky puzzle systems was the flavour for you. So certainly this year there was a lot of sequels come out, and I mentioned that in the very beginning with Modern Warfare 2, Uncharted 2, Halo expansion, Killzone 2. Let's talk about Scribblenauts, which is the most original game for 2009. To be honest, I haven't played it, but I've heard a lot about it. Aaron, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's a DS game. It's very simple graphics. They almost look like they're drawn by someone with a crayon. And you've basically got this little guy on a screen, and you need to get him to a star. or you need to fulfill some requirement that grants you a star. And one of the missions is, for instance, I think the first level actually is you appear on the screen, you've got a policeman, a fireman, a nurse, and some other person, I think it was a lumberjack, standing on the screen with you, and it says, give two of these characters the tools they need. And then you have to write in the box in the window above what you want to appear on the screen, and it just appears. So they're on the screen, and you might want, you know, give the guy an axe, or give the policeman a gun, or something like that, or whatever you want, and you type it in, and I think there's about 50,000 items in the game that you can summon by writing their description.
Okay, so have you tried dildo?
No, nothing profane, nothing okay. vulgar, so dildo won't work.
But you tried it, so that's good.
But yeah, obviously I did try it immediately. Because I thought, you know, the nurse, you don't know if she's a naughty nurse or not, so it might work for her. Policeman, he might, you know, be a village people type. At first I thought it was a village people, so I thought, you know, Indian's missing, so right, Indian. Didn't happen. But once you've done the... Actually, that's a lie. You're right, Indian, and Indian does appear. But once you've got past the first couple of levels, obviously you'd start experimenting like crazy, because you do get a lot of points for more experimental solutions. Like one of the levels, there's a lumberjack in a tree, and it says help him do his job. And you can give him an axe and he cuts it down, or a chainsaw and he cuts it down. Or you can have a beaver appear and bite the tree in half, and then you get more points or something like that. And then after a while, you've got, you know, a bee in a garden, and you have to get rid of the bee. So you decide to summon a ninja with a bazooka. You get the ninja with a bazooka to kill the bee, and obviously get more points for that. But there's a lot of stuff you can summon. Like my son started typing in stuff like God, and God appeared. Like a guy with a big beard and a white robe and walked around killing really? All the bad guys on the screen for you. And you type in heaven and a big building with pearly gates and clouds around it appears. And Santa appears and gives everyone presents, which is really weird.
You can have God and the devil fight each other.
Yes, that's very cool. And ninjas and pirates automatically fight
Wasn't
each other.
Wasn't that God and Santa? God and the devil?
No, God and Santa don't fight, which is a shame because I'd like to see who'd win that.
But imagine God on a skateboard and then give him a shotgun and taking on Cthulhu. It's sort of pretty cool for those scenarios.
It is.
It's a game where you can say, remember all those questions? I wonder what would win out of this and this. This is the game that can solve most of those questions for you.
So, Sam, have you put in Xbox 360 and PS3?
Yeah, it didn't come up. It was a bit weird.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
I think the PlayStation...
Just try DSi and PSP and see what happens.
I think the PlayStation would squash the Xbox.
But the Xbox would have more friends to come and help it.
After a while, that would just turn red and blow up.
But a new one would just be summoned and replaced. It's like, sorry, you can't actually be killed.
As poor as I am and as many money troubles as I have... Every time my Xbox breaks, I always seem to have a new one in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
Actually, when my last one went the morning, and I bought one that afternoon.
My last one died during Resident Evil 5, and I sulked for 3 hours and went and bought a new one.
I think that's probably because you guys have got massive libraries of games as well.
And
huge friends list that you want to be able to play those games still. You have to buy another console even if it does break.
That's right.
And we run a video game website, so it sort of doesn't work if we don't have that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too.
Actually, we'd be all right. When Aaron loses his console, we're going to be fucked.
Yeah.
While certainly far from innovative, Shadow Complex was a welcome, high-definition return to classics like the original Metroid, offering up platforming gold and completist utopia. Built on Epic's Gears of War-powering Unreal Engine, Shadow Complex left you feeling spoilt that such a game was only the cost of an arcade title. And featuring everybody's favourite video game voice actor, Nolan North, Shadow Complex is a top-quality production that exceeds its $30 peers.
So, Derek, we've given it to Shadow Complex, and I think you agree with us, but I'm not really sure why, because it gave you the most grief out of any game. So tell us the story.
Okay, where do we begin? Shadow Complex and I, it's almost a marriage, like a lot of marriages, they don't work out, unfortunately. My first marriage with it lasted 2 hours before it glitched out and the blue line would go. I expectantly or stupidly went onto forums with a screenshot that I took. Everyone was a fucking smart ass and would just say, "Oh, just follow the blue line. Oh, it should be in that room. Are you sure you haven't checked the room?" Yeah, I'm fucking sure I haven't checked the room.
No, the best one was, "There's a button to turn the blue line on and off." Oh, really? You haven't tried that?
Oh, no, that's why there's a blue line in my picture of the map. So we had a divorce. Like a lot of things, I realized that, you know, hey, I wanted to get back.
Because we all kept encouraging you to play it because it's the game of the year for best.
Exactly. So I went
independent.
Okay. Look, I've been burnt before. There's a couple of things that she does that I don't like, but hey, I'm willing to redo our nuptials and go back into it. This time, I got halfway through the game, and it corrupted on me. There isn't a save points at any or any save games. You've just got the one. I completely deleted it off my system. I re-downloaded it and thought, okay, I'm going to give it one last try. Okay? So, you know, we just freshly filed these divorce papers. We decided to get married once again. We did the nuptials. This time it was a really low-key affair. We didn't invite anyone. There wasn't a, you know, we just had Red Rooster doing the catering. And we basically went off, I played it, I was up to the last particular room, and I could see where the blue line was going, and I thought, okay, well, I'm pretty sure I'm pretty near the end of the game. I've got, you know, I've just got the plasma rifle, and I'm pretty sure plasma cannon, whatever it was, and I'm pretty sure we're just about to finish this thing. So I'm going to go explore a little, and I ended up in the last room you're supposed to, and I triggered an event. Which I don't want to ruin. Can't spoil, but pretty much it meant that there was no way for me to actually finish the game because this event would trigger in the wrong sequence. Soon as I'd leave a room, I'd die. If I tried to circumvent it in any other way, I'd die. So the lack of save games made it very difficult for me. But from even though, you know, we had a difficult kind of relationship together, it's definitely, you know, well worth of the time that I did spend into it. Best downloadable, and it's distracting me a little bit there, but that's okay.
Because your story went on for like 10 minutes, and yeah. I didn't expect you to talk that long.
That's right.
No, but so Shadow Complex, it harkens back to Metroid days and Castlevania, and it's probably the best value a downloadable game from the Xbox Live Arcade that I've ever played. There's a good amount of hours particularly if it glitches out and you've got to play it through three times all the way and then ask your friend what happens in the end because you can't finish it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a lot of replay value in it.
I know, and it's kind of sad that I probably could have done the 100% and the 13% playthroughs in the same amount of time I dropped on that game. Because when it glitched out on the blue line, I actually spent 2.5 hours trying to get into the right room, checking everywhere, and when I reinstalled it, oh, I came into the room, and there's the thing that I needed, there's the scuba set. So yeah, fuck you, Complex, but I love you.
So Aaron, you think Torchlight should have got the award?
Yeah, I didn't consider, because I saw it, I think when you sent it to me initially, it was indie game of the year, not downloadable game of the year. And I thought because it came from Epic, it didn't really count as an indie game, Shadow Complex. Although I probably would have voted for Torchlight anyway because I thought Torchlight was fantastic.
Right.
It's one of those games that nobody played and was just brilliant. I mean, it was an utter Diablo clone, but still a good Diablo clone. Probably the best Diablo clone since Diablo.
Yeah.
Made by the people who made Diablo.
Made by people who made that, which helps, obviously. In making
yeah,
a Diablo
when you
want to
clone yourself.
It's kind of like when you want to clone. No, I'm not going to go there.
Okay. Can we acknowledge that this year is probably the best year it's been for downloadable games and content? There's like stuff like Fat Princess, Trials HD, which only just missed out, and stuff like Battlefield
Flower.
Bad Company. No, not Battlefield Bad Company. Or Flower. Battlefield 1943.
43,
yep.
You know,
GTA episodes.
Fallout 3 content. It's just so much that you could just you know, buy one game and download more content, or just never even go to the video store and play some massive, massive games.
Yeah, like the value you got out of Broken Steel DLC for Fallout, that was just awesome. But we are talking about best downloadable or indie, and I agree. I actually think it only just got over the line with Trials for me, because that was just so much fun, and that's definitely one of the boxes I like to tick when I look for a game, because that's why game, for the fun aspect of it, and that was a very fun game. Where Shadow Complex stole a lot of that fun for me, but you know, it doesn't take away the fact that it was a very good game.
Well, you talk about the difference between an independent and the downloadable. I heard somewhere that with Trials HD, the developers actually seeded it on torrent sites to try and get a bit of a following for it.
Yep, they pirated it themselves.
Mm.
Clever, which really.
Seemed to have worked. I mean, because it is quite a popular game. Well, do you know the sales figures on it, Sam?
No, I don't. They haven't actually released any on Trials HD, but I'm pretty sure it would have sold fairly well, because, well, every forum I've ever gone on, there's always a Trials HD forum where people have put their gamer tags up so you can compare times.
All right, so the time has come to announce that Aussie Game of the Year for 2009. Before we do announce it, let's talk about some of the games that were up for it. Obviously, Modern Warfare 2, just in time. Assassin's Creed 2, just in time. But there's certainly a lot of games that came out this year that could be classed as AAA titles. Sam, we don't know what the game of the year is, but what's yours? Can I guess? Can I guess that it's Uncharted 2?
I'm pretty sure that's a safe bet for me. It's just, it's one of those games that sits in my collection, and even though I'm not playing it like at that time, I think maybe I should go play some Uncharted 2. It's just something I'll just pick up and play, and once I get done with another game, I'll go back to Uncharted 2, and it's just, I'm constantly thinking about playing that game. And it's just such a fantastic game that I couldn't really pick anything else. It's just, it has everything that you want in a AAA game.
Yeah, well, obviously, Modern Warfare 2 would be up there for the, for me anyway, just for the everything that you get on it. It's got a fantastic and epic, albeit short, single-player game. Obviously, the multiplayer, which we've talked about, and the Spec Ops, they seem to have really nailed every single genre, done it well. None of this sort of diluting that we talked about with some of the games that come out, where they don't put enough effort into everything. And for me, that's probably very, very close to Game of the Year. Obviously, I know what is Game of the Year. I'm not going to spoil it for everybody.
I think it's worth noting that everything we're really considering for Game of the Year this year is a sequel. There's no noteworthy new IP this year that we felt was really AAA. Are we sort of thinking of that for Game of the Year, Infamous? Compared to some of the stuff that's up there?
I did. I think it was better than Assassin's Creed 2, which I was considering as well.
Better than Killzone 2? Better than Call of Duty 4, 5, 6, whatever it is?
I haven't played Modern Warfare 2, but I think it's better than Killzone 2.
Yeah?
Yeah, right. What are your thoughts on that? Because you're playing it through right now.
Yeah, look, I just think, for me, no, definitely it wouldn't even be in my top 5 for the year. Resident Evil 5 is the one that I'd probably lean towards. It's tough. I think even Uncharted or Resident Evil 5 would be up there for me. Killzone 2 was pretty cool, but definitely not Game of the Year. I think Modern Warfare 2 does. It's also just such good value. You think, like, when you're spending $120, let's say, max for a game, $80 at some of the other places, that's one game you get every cent out of.
Yeah.
Whereas, there's some other games I've played during the year, like Ghostbusters, for example, that was worth $10 to me.
Yeah. I just got Uncharted 2 does that as well. It has the same sort of stuff as what Modern Warfare 2
has. Yeah, exactly. Uncharted 2 and Resident Evil 5 are the only games I've played more than once through this year. So I've played Uncharted 2 through twice in entirety. And I played Resident Evil 5 three times through. So.
Yeah. How much of the online have you played in Uncharted 2, Derek?
Enough to get the trophies.
Yep. So, just one game.
Two games. But there, I've actually played the mode where, which I guess it's very similar to like World of War Zombies or Horde and Gears of War or the version in ODST which escapes me at the moment. But yeah, where
firefight,
where you've just got the respawning enemies, and I really enjoyed that because I was surprisingly proficient at it after playing Uncharted 1 all the way through and then Uncharted 2 twice through. So I played Uncharted that IP for 3 weeks because that's the only game I touched, and you when you played it through a lot, you get pretty not too bad at the game. And it's actually, I thought it'd be so tacked on and rubbish, but I was actually really surprised about how good it was. And it's something that I actually think I would go back and play online, surprisingly, because I thought it was just going to be a tack-on waste of time, but it's actually done pretty well. So,
well, it's almost as deep as the first Modern Warfare, because like the leveling system in it is sort of taken from it. You know, you get your boosters, mm-hmm. which are effectively perks, and you unlock money, which you can then buy boosters at certain levels and new skins and all that for your character. Well, it's got a fair bit of customization and just keep you playing.
And it was nice that achievements in the single player went towards multiplayer purchases as well.
Yeah, yep, yep.
So what about you, Aaron? What is it for this year for you?
Oh, there was a lot of stuff this year, but I would say my probably top three are... Assassin's Creed 2 was really brilliant for the little I played of it. I'm only probably a third into the game, but so far it's fantastic. Can't wait to get it out and finish it. Call of Duty, I think, it seems silly not to discuss that. It's probably right up there. Uncharted 2. And I think Batman deserves a mention as well.
That's right.
Although people had a lot of problems with it, and we haven't really talked about it at all. Batman Arkham Asylum, although I don't know if you call it a new IP, was probably one of the best new IP games. It was a lot better than I expected it to be. Especially for being a licensed game. Like, if we had a licensed game category, I'm sure Batman would be up there.
Well, it is tough to pick because there are so many games out this year. I mean, Red Faction.
That's another one, yeah.
So, all right, let's go through and find out what is that Aussie Game of the Year for 2009.
We're late for that now.
What more needs to be said about Naughty Dog's epic masterpiece other than this is a trilogy, right?
This guy doesn't give up. Get down! That's what I'm talking about.
Well, thanks for joining us for our reunion That Aussie Gamecast. It's been something that I've been wanting to get back into, and certainly the reason we haven't done it sooner is the very reason why we stopped doing it in the first place, is because the amount of time and production that it takes to do an hour or so podcast with multiple guys in different states is logistically impossible, basically. The boys at Thumbpad do a fantastic job, but they do it all in the same room. They've got a great atmosphere when they're doing it. And anybody who hasn't listened or doesn't subscribe to the Thumbpad podcast, you have to. I want to make mention too of Level 3. Their show is on Melbourne 31. And in fact, Mick from Thumbpad co-hosts the show with Jason down there. And it's another fairly independent, I guess you could call it independent because it is on the community station, video game show. They do a fantastic job. And anybody who hasn't checked out their site and certainly Thumbpad's podcast on thataussiegamesite.com.au, please go through and do it. Anybody who's not a member of That Aussie Game Site and has enjoyed listening to us go on and on, certainly add us to your friends lists on Xbox and PlayStation. Join the forums. We're always talking about the games outside of the podcast. I'm sure there's some gems that somebody will release drunkenly on a Friday night about some new game that's coming out. Definitely the podcast is something that I really enjoy doing. And it hasn't been discussed, but perhaps we might be doing it a little bit more regularly than once per year. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Thanks, mate.
And Aaron.
Before we sign off, are we doing a quick anticipatometer for next year?
Yes, let's do that. Actually, let's do the anticipatometer. You better go first, Aaron.
I was going to say Bayonetta for next year for 2010. After playing the demo the other day, I'm very much looking forward to playing the full game.
Now, Bayonetta has the iconic female character in it with the massive juggalugs, yeah?
Massive juggalugs in the costume made out of her own hair.
That's right.
That flies off her and turns into a giant hair monster and eats the other characters, which just describing even again in my head sounds awesome.
Yes, on paper sounds very, very cool.
The demo's on Xbox Live, so it's worth getting hold of and having a play.
Okay, cool.
All right, what about you, Sam? I bet I can guess what it is.
No, you probably won't.
Okay.
Guess what console it's on.
No? No. Battlefield Bad Company 2.
Oh, really?
I've been playing the beta non-stop. It is really, really good. Like, I didn't really like the first one. I was not a fan of it. It seems I played a bit of Call of Duty 4 and I thought, this is actually pretty good, and implemented some stuff from that into the game, and it's great. Imagine, you know, destruction like almost as good as Red Faction, but you get tanks and jeeps and ATVs, and you get to fly the UAVs yourself. It's going to be really good.
Yeah, I've heard that they've taken a lot of the Call of Duty method and brought it across, and rightly so. I mean, why not copy?
That and the Mag Beta has been really, really good as well.
A massive action game.
Terrible title.
You got access for that because you're part of that as a game site, didn't you? Because you're elite.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
So two massive player war sims, mate.
Yep.
Right.
That looked good.
Derek?
Probably FIFA 11, just for how innovative it's going to be.
Wait, was that meant to be a joke?
That was definitely a joke.
Oh, good. Just check. I wasn't sure if you were serious.
I wasn't sure whether I was going to say that or Wanted Weapons of Fate 2. I don't think that's going to happen. For me, at the moment, I'm ADD boy, so I've got a short attention span, so God of War 3.
Me too. Yep, God of War 3, and certainly the original two games, which they are coming out here in Australia. Are they?
I believe they are, yeah.
I believe
yeah,
they
definitely,
are.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be on the PSN store as well.
That hasn't been mentioned at all.
They must be going to do that. They'd be crazy not to.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's been selling well.
It looks fantastic. Like, I saw the full review on Game Trailers. They did mention the cutscenes are really disparaging because it's just not at the same quality. You can actually, but at the same token, you actually see that hey, they've put a bit of time and love into bringing it up to speed. So I'm very keen to check that out. If you haven't checked out my demo impressions, I definitely would read that and probably download it because I reckon it's just awesome. Just absolutely.
Yeah, you don't
awesome.
Get paid per clicks, man. So don't pump your own stuff.
Oh, okay.
You don't get paid at all. All right, well, thanks for joining us on That Aussie Game Site. No, That Aussie Game Cast. The only one for the last half of 2009. As I said, we may or may not be around a bit more often. Thanks for joining us.